Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Today, we're looking at nutrition and pregnancy. It's a time when good nutrition is vital and when there are significant changes in the body's nutritional requirements. But of course, there's no one-size-fits-all approach. Changes during pregnancy are far-reaching, and every woman requires different nutrition based on their body, their lifestyle, and their pregnancy. There are other challenges as well. There are myths and misleading stories about food and pregnancy, and there are enough of them to fill a very large book, or more likely a never-ending Twitter feed. So today we're going to look at the nutritional demands of pregnancy and discover which aspects of diet are most important and which advice and products are actually worth taking seriously. With me to discuss this is Hannah Love, a fantastic nutritional therapist, sleep expert, and pediatric nurse. Hello there, Hannah.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Ah, it's a great pleasure. It's brilliant of you to join us. So do you think nutritional advice that the majority of pregnant women get is, generally speaking, reliable? Do people have access to decent sources of information?
I think it's a really difficult subject because, generally speaking, in the NHS, nutritional advice can be quite poor, and especially around pregnancy advice. I think that one of the main reasons for that is that professionals are really worried to give concrete advice because there isn't concrete evidence, because you can't put research behind most of the advice that you give to pregnant women nutritionally. It's just not ethical in order to do so.
And why is that? Can you explain a little bit more?
For example, there's evidence to suggest that caffeine in the early stages of pregnancy could increase a woman's chance of miscarriage, but it's completely unethical to do a study on that and give one woman 1,000 milligrams of caffeine and another woman a placebo pill, because if it does cause miscarriages, then obviously then that's going to cause a massive uproar, rightly so. So you can't actually do these randomised placebo trials in order to quantify the evidence that most medical doctors want to have in order to give definite advice to patients.
So does that mean that most of the nutritional advice that's given is based on a hunch, or is there some other way of trying to work out what advice women should get?
So most of the advice filters through via kind of observational studies or meta-analysis of studies, so looking back over populations of people. And there's very little kind of like randomised placebo trials, which is what most medical advice is based on. And so therefore they can look back and they can say that a population of people in a population of people that had miscarriages, then this percentage of people had more than 2 cups of coffee a day, for example. But there's so many variables on that. I mean, depending on race, on weight, on nutrition, on educational status, there's so many things that they can't have control over, that they can never say categorically, or it takes a long time to filter through to say that this is causing this in pregnancy, because you can't do a proper trial for it.
Now, this is fascinating, because I wonder if this is the root cause of there being so much pseudoscience and myths and people sitting on sofas claiming on TV, claiming that, one thing is good and one thing is bad around. Do you think pregnancy is particularly rife with pseudoscience and myth?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's kind of the myth of needing to eat for two, not allowed to have any seafood or fish, that it's hard to eat out when you're pregnant, or you can't sustain a pregnancy on a vegetarian diet. These are all things that everybody have heard on a day-to-day basis, especially when you first get pregnant and everybody's offering you advice of how you need to change your diet. And there is this small element of truth in all of these areas. Of course there is. You do need to have a few extra calories. There are certain seafoods that you should avoid during pregnancy, but I think a combination of there not being any definite kind of guidelines and also a little bit of Chinese whispers then kind of makes it very confusing for parents to know what to listen to and what not to listen to.
Yeah. Now, I think it's probably best we'll save the myths till a bit further into the programme, because otherwise we're just promulgating them even more, aren't we? So so let's deal with some of the things that we do know, first of all. So so now, pregnancy is often talked about in terms of trimesters, groups of 3 months, and some people talk about a post-birth fourth trimester. Is this a useful division when you're thinking about nutrition? Are there changes that are required in nutrition for the different stages?
Yeah, absolutely. There's some considerations. I mean, in the first trimester is when your baby is completely developing. So it's when it's really important to get certain nutrients. We all know about folic acid in pregnancy. I think most people, that's something that most people have heard about. And that's most important leading up to the conception, through conception and through the first trimester of pregnancy. I mean, there's research now and evidence to show that there's much more than just folic acid that is needed for babies to develop properly. When you're going into the later stage of the pregnancy, that's when the baby's growing more. And so that's when you need those extra calories that we were talking about a moment ago. There's also other considerations, such as reducing caffeine in the first trimester and trying to eat foods that might ward off things like gestational diabetes in the third trimester. So there's different things that you could categorise that fit into other things. But then there's also advice that you can give to parents, which is useful throughout the whole pregnancy and beyond.
I know that every case is probably different, but in general terms, what advice do you give to pregnant women? Are there some absolute basics beyond just five fruit and veg a day?
I mean, obviously, the folic acid is really important and ideally prior to conception. And I think it's really interesting to note that it took 30 years for people to realise that folic acid was the cause of neural tube defects. It was in the early 1960s that doctors found the link. And it wasn't until the early 90s that they actually realised that this was actually really important and advised for pregnant women to take folic acid. And it wasn't until 30 years later, just a couple of years ago, that it was brought in as fortification in foods. So everybody knows about folic acid. That's a good one. 300 calories a day is kind of standard, the extra calories that you need. This eating for two has long gone. I think even the NHS has taken that on. And I think that even when I was pregnant with my eldest, which was 14 years ago now, I was advised that 300 calories a day was kind of all you needed, which is a couple of extra slices of toast, I think was how they put it when I was in my consultation. But we also know now that there are lots of other foods. I mean, vitamin A is vital for eye development, and vitamin C is vital for gums and teeth and bones and absorption of iron. And all of the B vitamins and iron are really important for red blood cells. And your red blood cells increase massively because your blood volume increases in order to get the blood to the baby. So all of these things, all of these vitamins are really important in pregnancy. So personally, I would advise a mum to go on a good multivitamin that's meant to be for pregnancy, as well as the folic acid, of course, or one that contains the amount of folic acid that they need. You also need to consider things like that are going to help with common pregnancy ailments like constipation, for example. Lots of mums suffer from constipation. If you've got a very poor diet, then that's not going to help with that at all. So good fats, water, fibre are obviously really important to keep mums moving, which is another thing that often happens. Increasing the amount of water you're drinking. You've got an extra blood volume in order to incorporate the baby's blood volume as well. So making sure that you're hydrated. And then also, I don't know, I've mentioned it before, but gestational diabetes is becoming more and more common in parents. So to consider sugar intake, protein intake and B vitamins as well.
And do you find when women are pregnant that this is a moment where they probably know a lot of the stuff about nutrition? You know, everyone sort of knows, and maybe we don't really apply it to our lives. But this is a moment of extreme focus on not just you, but somebody else as well. Is this the moment where they will adopt a better set of eating habits and then maybe drop it later on? Or is it difficult at all times to change your diet to make it better?
I think it's a time when parents start thinking about, or mums-to-be start thinking about their diet and what they're putting into their bodies. I definitely think that's the case. And speaking to other mums, they are more conscious, obviously, with alcohol and with caffeine and with things like that. I also think it can be a time, especially in that first trimester, and I know for myself, with my first baby, all I wanted to eat was gravy in the first 3 months. Anything else made me feel sick. And my husband would come home and he was like, what have we got for dinner? Something with gravy again. And I was like, yeah. So, and that's not the healthiest thing, but honestly, that's all I could hold down. I felt so sick for the first 3 months. And I noticed so many mums the same, friends of mine that have literally just been able to live on Skips and Whatsits and things in those first 3 months. So although you are very conscious about what's putting into your body, I think often the way that you feel dictates what foods you can take in.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about cravings, because it's fascinating stuff. I just wonder, you know, it's so commonplace that people have cravings. There must be some point in it. Is there an evolutionary imperative here? You know, why do women get cravings during pregnancy? Is there any evidence?
There isn't evidence. There hasn't been research to show, but there has been anecdotal evidence to show that you do sometimes crave the things that you're lacking in. And I looked after one woman nutritionally through her pregnancy, and it was quite an interesting story. She'd gone to a GP early on and she had really low levels of iron. She was really severely anemic. And the GP had advised her, you need to eat steak. So she'd taken this to the extreme and she'd been eating 4 or 5 steaks some days.
Wow.
Not every day, but she'd been eating a lot of steak. And she came to me because she was craving eating bricks. And she said she couldn't physically go past a wall without chewing on a wall or chewing on a brick, and all she wanted to do was eat these bricks. Yeah. And I was looked into her medical, what was happening, and I think that where she was so acidic from eating the amount of milk, she was craving the minerals that the bricks were, her body was telling her she needed. And as soon as we reduced down the amount of meat and swapped it for some vegetable alternatives for iron, she then stopped craving the bricks. So that was quite an interesting story that I helped one woman with. I've also had another woman that just couldn't stop eating toothpaste, and she had really bad tummy problems, which she didn't know whether was because she was eating the toothpaste. But then actually when we introduced some mint tea, it calmed her tummy down, which mint is very well known for helping with tummy issues. And she stopped craving the peppermint in the toothpaste. So there can be, I think that there's some cravings that you should definitely listen to. I know that with my middle girl, I couldn't drink water. It made me feel really sick drinking water, and I just craved fruit. And looking back, I think it was probably because of the high water content of fruit. And it was things like watermelons and things that I was wanting to eat all day.
Yeah. Plus your vitamins.
Plus the vitamins, absolutely, of course. Yes, absolutely. I think there is a time when you want to listen to the cravings. Whether or not my gravy or banoffee pie cravings had anything to do with nutrition is questionable.
I mean, frankly, I crave gravy and banoffee pie all the time anyway, so I'm not sure if that's a crave. But so, I mean, quite interestingly, so I was filming in Haiti and filming with lots of very poor communities, and there's a huge culture of eating clay. So they make these little clay plates, and you break them up and you eat them. And you were talking about bricks earlier on. There are quite a few things like that. And in Haiti, obviously, there are lots of nutritional problems. And again, I wonder if what you're saying is true, that it's a nutritional deficiency that needs to be tackled in some way.
It's well known that clay is very, very good for cleaning out toxins and for digestion and for helping with that. So it could well be that that's the reason why they do it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, cravings, I think we think are always funny. We've been laughing about your gravy craving, and banoffee pie and bricks. But at some point, I presume it can get quite serious as well. Can craving, have you come across some cravings that are really actually properly problematic?
Yeah, absolutely. I had one lady who really wanted to eat bleach. And obviously, I was like advising her, absolutely do not do that. Another lady that really wanted to eat cat food, which was a strange one. I have no idea why that was. I think that there's, there was another woman, actually. This is an interesting one, that really wanted to eat Brussels sprouts with literally everything. And she said she even put Brussels sprouts into a spaghetti bolognese. And when I looked into it, Brussels sprouts have got really high iron and high folic acid as well. So that was probably one that her body was telling her that she needed. So there are certain cravings that absolutely you should listen to, but other ones that are probably best left alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about foods to avoid? I mean, you talked a lot about some myths. Let's not talk about the myths because we'll just, solidify them. So what are there things that you ought to avoid a bit? you mentioned fish and a few other things earlier on. Let's lay down some good guidelines.
Yeah, so fish in general shouldn't be avoided during pregnancy. In fact, there's massive health benefits to oily fish and to the protein that they give you as well. There's just certain fish that should be avoided during pregnancy. So it's generally the big fish, so things like shark, swordfish, marlin, because they eat all of the little fish, they have high levels of toxic heavy metals in the actual fish. So you shouldn't be eating those on a regular basis, or avoiding them completely during pregnancy. You want to also avoid unpasteurized foods because they contain bacteria that could damage the baby. So things like unpasteurized cheeses, raw meat, raw fish, because again, they can contain bacteria. So sushi's fine as long as the fish is cooked, but if it's raw fish sushi, then that's something that you shouldn't be eating in pregnancy as well. I would also strongly recommend reducing caffeine massively, especially in the early stages of pregnancy, just because there is more and more research that's coming out to show the link between caffeine and miscarriage in the first trimester.
I mean, that's really solid advice then, isn't it? So are there other things that it might be useful to regulate? Are there specifics to help with things like energy levels, bloating, sleep issues? Or does that come back to just general nutritional advice?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Western diet is known to be low in certain nutrients, which are really, really important in pregnancy. So things like fatty acids, N3 fatty acids, are really quite low in a Western diet. And they have been shown to be so important in pregnancy and beyond. I mean, there's studies coming out that are showing that women that have low fatty acids in pregnancy are much more prone to things like postnatal depression. They are more prone to inflammatory diseases, which can also contribute to things like hip problems during the later stage of pregnancy. The vitamin A has always been quite controversial. There was a lot of studies that came out that showed that vitamin A can be really dangerous in pregnancy. All of the pregnancy vitamins will have vitamin A as beta carotene, which is a very safe version of vitamin A. And in fact, vitamin A is really important for babies' eyes and brain development. So that shouldn't be avoided completely. Generally speaking, from a diet, it's really important to get a lot of protein in during pregnancy. I think you're growing, if you think about it logically, you're growing a baby. And also protein's really good for blood sugar level regulation. And I think that often parents, especially mums, when they are feeling sick and poorly, they often gravitate towards the more kind of snacky, sugary type foods, which could be a reason why the incidence of gestational diabetes is getting bigger, because that is obviously, the more sugar you have, the more prone you are to getting gestational diabetes. So making sure that you've got really good proteins in your diet is really important. Things like, if you're vegetarian, then you can have from lentils or beans or nut butter. If you're eating meat and fish, then they're a really good source too. I think it's really important to make sure that you get some good fats. I think the NHS guidelines is still a little backwards on this, and they're saying to have a low fat diet. I think that you shouldn't be having saturated fats, but it's absolutely vital for parents to be eating high kind of omega-3 type fats, which you get from oily fish and nut butters and things like hummus and egg yolks and those kind of things, because your baby his brain is 60% fat, and so when you're growing your baby's brain, you need those fats for that development as well. And yeah, just having a good, healthy, all-round diet, but really focusing on the proteins and the fats, I think is really important.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you've mentioned supplements a couple of times, but you've also talked about the need for extra protein. Tell us a little bit about supplementation generally. I mean, there are lots of protein supplemented foods you can buy, pasta with extra protein and all these kinds of things. Useful? And which ones do you think are the most useful?
Supplement-wise, I mean, generally speaking, if you go and get any kind of good multivitamin, pregnancy multivitamin, they're going to have all of the things that you need. So the iron and the B vitamins and vitamin D, vitamin A, your folic acid, your vitamin C, and all of the vitamins work in synergy. So it is really important to have a good level of all of those rather than just the folic acid, which is what's recommended because they know that is vital in pregnancy. The other one, which is really interesting, which I would definitely supplement, or make sure that you're taking through foods, but again, the Western diet is very low in this, is good bacteria. I mean, in Japan and things, they eat lots of fermented foods, which keeps their gut bacteria well. And in fact, I was reading about a study which was done on 64,000 parents in Japan, and it showed that the parents that ate more fermented foods, their baby's atopic eczema was lower when they were born. The baby slept better.
Yeah, that's good news.
Yeah, the baby's the gut bacteria, which is passed from the mother to the baby during the birth, meant that the baby slept around 10 hours a night if they had good bacteria. So I think it's really important to make sure that your gut bacteria is working well. That's not only just because of sleep and for the baby when it's passed on, but also, of course, it's good for constipation, for bloating, all of the things that mums often suffer from during pregnancy. It's going to help with if you get a good bacteria going on when you're pregnant.
Yeah. Now, we've talked a lot about physical health, but there are mental health conditions and considerations as well. Depression's a big risk, antenatal and postnatal depression. We've made podcasts about the link between mental health and nutrition, but is there anything specific to bear in mind for pregnant women to link nutrition and mental health?
Absolutely. And this is something that I've been looking into more recently, because I think that more and more parents are really suffering from antenatal depression and postnatal depression. It's getting more prevalent, and one of the biggest things that I've seen is that there was a 71% link, shows a link between vitamin D and postnatal depression. So if and I know now that the NHS is advising for pregnant women to take vitamin D. In fact, they're advising for the whole population to take it, especially through the winter months when you're not getting it from the sunshine. But there's other micronutrients that we know are really, really protective for mental health. Things like vitamin D, calcium, zinc, iron, selenium, folate, B vitamins, all of those have been shown to reduce your risk of postnatal depression if taken during pregnancy and beyond. And finally, the biggest thing, which I've already mentioned, is the fatty acids. They are so protective for the brain, and they have shown in lots and lots of studies that women that have higher levels of fatty acids, especially omega-3 fatty acids, have much lower levels of incidence of postnatal depression and postpartum depression.
That's a huge bit of advice then, isn't it? What about issues around morning sickness? Are there connections between nutrition and morning sickness?
There's not connections as in research to show that particular things, not that I've found or read anywhere, as to whether or not lacking in nutrients. There are kind of bits and pieces here suggesting that maybe a certain nutrients, if you're low, could contribute to the sickness. I think the biggest thing is how to manage the morning sickness. And some women just cannot keep anything down. And I think that if that's the case, then of course you need to make sure that you're getting all of those nutrition that you need from the supplementation. And just taking a folic acid supplement isn't going to give you everything that you need. Taking little and often can often help. When I've spoken to parents who are really suffering from morning sickness, just making sure that if you get hungry, then it often makes it a lot worse. I know that when I was pregnant, I used to have just a couple of Brazil nuts next to my bed, because if I got up to go to the toilet in the middle of the night, if I got up out of bed without having something to eat, then I would feel sick immediately. Whereas if I just had those and waited 10, 20 seconds, then I would be absolutely fine. Yeah. And making sure you ideally snacking on healthy things. So nuts, half a banana, sips of water, a little bit of avocado, even if it's a teaspoon of something, then just taking that regularly through the day can also help with the sickness, but obviously helps also to get those nutrition in that you need.
Yeah. And what about food and labour? Are there, you know, labour can be short, it can be also incredibly long, you know, several days of labour. Is there any nutritional advice to help that process?
I think that most people are advised to keep your energy levels up by eating little and often during labour and taking on snacks. I actually posted a question into my community recently, and one of the mums commented on there that she had gestational diabetes, and actually the snacks that they'd advised for her hospital bag went completely against the things that she was able to eat because of her gestational diabetes. And so she was saying that she needed to have more advice on what snacks would be good for somebody that shouldn't be eating lots of sugar, because the things that they're advising, like fruit and cereal bars and sweets and chocolate and things, weren't obviously appropriate for her to be eating. And so things like a protein-based cereal bar or some nuts to snack on, and fruit is great. A jar of peanut butter. I took a jar of peanut butter in my baby bag and just had a spoon of that with some fruit, because in between contractions, so that can be really helpful as well. But yeah, just definitely, some labours are 24, 48 hours long, so you need to be eating regularly through it, but you don't want to be eating massive amounts. Obviously, you're not going to be eating meals and things, so just snacking on healthy snacks throughout is a good idea.
Yeah. Now, I this is a bit of a selfish question, really, but what about pregnant women's partners? Do you see pregnant women's partners helping or hindering? Are there frustrations in couples about food? So I guess really the question is, what can partners do to help?
I mean, be supportive. I mean, I think a lot of the time, obviously, hormones are going on all over the place, and the last thing you want to be doing is having someone looking down on you for having that extra banoffee pie or commenting on different things. Yeah, extra gravy on your dinner. But just being supportive and realizing that actually you're going to have up days and you're going to have down days. Just being there for your partner and supporting them in what they need from you. Yeah.
And maybe doing a bit of the cooking yourself. Now, another thing that doesn't get much attention is the nutritional requirements after birth. Are there some specific pieces of advice you can offer for how you should be eating after giving birth?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that some of the mums that I've spoken to, because obviously I work a lot with parents in those first few weeks following birth with their babies, and a lot of the mums are like, I've been told that I need to lose weight, but they're breastfeeding, they've got so much going on. And a lot of the advice surrounding postnatal nutrition is like getting back to your birth weight, making sure that you're eating healthily. And actually, when you've got a baby there and you're breastfeeding and you're up and down 10 times a night, it's the last thing you're thinking about is making yourself a salad when you wake up in the morning. So I think that to make sure that you continue with that balanced advice, again, this is when the dads can come in and make sure that you've got some healthy snacks in the cupboard so you're not reaching out for the packet of crisps or whatever. Making sure that you're having plenty of fluids, especially if you're breastfeeding, because you're giving all of that fluid to your baby. Obviously, your nutritional requirements are still high, because especially if you're breastfeeding, because you're still producing all of the nutrition that you need and that your baby needs. And yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of parents are told that during pregnancy and beyond, no matter what you eat, you're going to give your baby what you need. But that doesn't mean that it's not taking away from what you need as a mum. And that could be, I'm not saying it is, but it could be, my opinion is why there is a lot of mental health problems, and why parents are kind of like, you can lose your hair after pregnancy. There's lots of things that happen to your body after pregnancy. And some of these could be attributed to your baby taking what they need before you get what you need from it. So if you carry on with your pregnancy multivitamin, carry on with your probiotics, carry on with your essential fatty acid supplement, and then that means that if you then do have a day when all you do is snack on white toast and butter, then it doesn't matter so much.
Okay, now my last question is really about the food industry, because this is a food industry aimed podcast. Overall, how friendly do you think the food industry is to pregnancy? When you're shopping, you're eating out, looking for useful products, is the industry really geared up to be helpful, and could they do things differently?
I think that, labelling is getting much better now on foods. So I think that the parents can actually tell what they need. If they know which kind of foods they're allowed to eat and which foods they're not allowed to eat, we'll say raw fish sushi, for example, on the packet. It will say unpasteurised cheese on the packet. I think that going back, I remember vividly when Oliver was little, trying to look at all of the tiny writing to find out which cheese was pasteurised and which cheese wasn't, not knowing which. I knew that I wasn't allowed it, but I wasn't wasn't know which one I wasn't allowed. Things like eggs, for example, you have the safety stamp on the eggs, which says it's salmonella safe, which then you realise that you can eat it safely in pregnancy, even if you're not cooking the yolk properly. I think it's interesting with the folic acid story that when I was reading, I didn't realise that it took 30 years for the UK to bring in nationalised fortification of foods to include folic acid. And I thought that was really interesting that it only came in a couple of years ago. It was done a lot earlier in the United States, but it's taken a little bit longer to come into the UK as fortification. I think that's so important because often the incidence of neural tube defects is because parents haven't taken it prior to being pregnant. And I think a lot of the time, mums don't start taking folic acid until maybe even a month or 2 months into the pregnancy even, which is really too late at that point. So the fortification of foods, I think, is a big step in making sure that babies are safe from foods.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that's a huge amount of really useful advice. I'm glad that we've actually not given too much time to the myths, because I think you mentioned them and people forget. You know, was that the advice or was that the myth? I can't quite remember. So I think that was absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for giving your knowledge with such good grace. Hannah Love, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. Remember, if you enjoy the Food Matters Live podcast, you can subscribe via your preferred platform. And if you feel inclined, go on, leave us a review. Thank you so much for listening.